Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave. And have you ever asked yourself, what would happen to Batman if his parents didn't die? Or Spider-Man and Uncle Ben didn't die and he never got the lesson, with great power comes great responsibility? Well, I think our guests this week answer that question with Champions of Earth. And it's a fun little ride. I've had a chance to look at it, and I think our fans would agree this is a good book, so you guys should check it out. So, this week we have Alex Banquita and James Ricardo with us. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, how you doing?
Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for doing this. So why don't you guys tell us a little bit about Champions of Earth?
Am I supposed to just think, like, I'm Alex?
Oh.
Just so people know who's who, right?
Yeah, this is true. Say hello, Alex.
Hi, I'm Alex Banquita, co-creator, co-writer, character designer, and a cover artist on the book.
And James?
I'm James Ricardo, co-writer, co-creator on Champions of Earth.
Okay. So, Alex, why don't you tell us a little bit about Champions
of Earth? Sure. Champions of Earth is the first product I've actually put out for funding. I started a comic book company in 2012 called Fry Entertainment. And Champions of Earth is the first one I've actually kind of just put out recently for funding. And it's just this really fun superhero book for me. What's fun about it is James and I write it together. So I think you can see both of our senses work out. We have a very similar sense of humor, but I think I'm a little more study than James. So I think there's this nice mix of, like, bubbly, haha, funny, and then, like, kind of cynicism I throw into the book. But Champions of Earth is basically, I think you actually kind of hit the nail on the head there when you were saying that imagine if Spider-Man didn't have Uncle Ben, or Batman didn't have, you know, all this stuff happen to him. But I think the only other part to add to that is, and they were also really stupid. Because the Champions of Earth are just, they're really dumb. They're young, and, you know, they don't really have any ideals or any morals. And I kind of jokingly call them, like, the Kim Kardashians of superheroes, or, like, the Justin Bieber of superheroes. And a big element of the book, too, is that they're actually superstars. They're these big media stars. Everybody loves them. They're always on TV. They sell things. And they have this agent who kind of pimps them out. So what makes it worse is not only are they the way they are, they have an agent who's basically kind of manipulating them and pushing them into doing things to make money for him. Mm-hmm. So it's almost this, like, funny combination of, you know, Dumb and Dumber meets superpowers meets, like, way too much media attention. And then in the background, you have these characters actually are real superheroes locked up for their crimes, kind of sitting in jail as everybody goes on and on about how awesome they are.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I liked about it. It's, I mean, it's definitely a story of our time. There's a lot of modern elements to it. But right, take the classic superhero story and turn it on its ear a little bit.
Sure.
So what were some of the, I'll ask James, what were some of the inspirations behind it?
Oh, well, a lot of my writing comes from real life experience and just, things I see on the daily. Like, a lot of the book has to do with, like, modern, like, social commentaries, I guess. It really just a lot of real life stuff. But outside of that, a lot of other inspirations come from, like, you remember, like, the first couple issues of, like, the Invincible series by Robert Kirkman?
Right.
Like, we're really focused on, like, the teenager / superhero aspect of the book, mm-hmm. as opposed to all that other crazy stuff when it got a little bit later in the series. But, yeah, it's like, we're really inspired by, like, those, like, teeny high school superhero kind of things. That with, like, a little dash of cynicism and a little, dark James sense of humor, I guess you could say.
So Alex was telling me a little bit before we got started, but how'd you guys meet?
Dungeons and Dragons.
I thought he was going to change the story, because I told you what I told you, and I'm going, I wonder if he's going to say something different on the air, right?
No way, I'm proud of that, that's great.
Because that's something you're supposed to put in the closet, right? I thought he was going to go, we were playing football, and we kind of just ran into each other.
So, we were playing Dungeons & Dragons, and actually, you were cool because you noticed me drawing pictures in my notebook. You're like, you see pictures, and that's really how we started talking.
I forgot about that. Yeah, James actually, he used to, well, part of Champions of Earth is James used to do these comics called J-Man, which was a parody of Bartman, and it was just James Man. And it would just be whatever is going on in his life that he wants to complain about, but he would have like a superhero version of himself dealing with these things. So, and part of the idea behind Champions of Earth was one day James, you know, James just kind of sporadically, if something happens to him that annoys him or he finds funny, he'll just make these little notebook comics about it with J-Man in it. And then, you know, one day he made a comic about, it would be funny if J-Man became extremely popular and all these real superheroes couldn't stand him and they wanted to put him in jail or beat him up. And I said, that's a funny idea for a book. And that's kind of what launched Champions of Earth a little bit in my head.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a lot of stuff like that. Cool. I guess what's funny about it for me is that James and I both have this really similar sense of humor when it comes to certain things. Like, and it really comes out in the book. We almost can't even avoid it. There's parts where we're really obsessed with dogs.
Okay.
Type of animal that just doesn't belong in the scene. there's this one dramatic scene in issue 4 where it's like things are getting really serious and there's this stupid monkey in the scene. I remember when we were writing the script, it wasn't
monkey
even
was like ad-libbed. We just came up with that as we were. We were like, he should have a monkey with him. That was it. That's it.
He's a monkey. He's funny. And then, you know, so I think for us, it's funny because we have, you know, a well-structured story and this is what's happening. This is what's going on. And then what we tend to do is we figure out how to get our plot to work and how to there's a message to the book. Whatever the message of the book is, I don't want to reveal it.
Right.
And after that, we'll just go, hey, what's stuff that we find really funny? And, you know, like, in the first issue of Champions of Earth, when they get their superpowers, they tell the media one thing, but in reality, that's not what happened. And what happens with J-Man is he gets, like, his parents are trailer trash, and his girlfriend dumps him, and he becomes suicidal. And we're like, well, that's based on James. Like, that's
right.
That's funny because, yeah, that's probably what has basically happened at some point.
Minus the superpowers, I mean.
Right.
You didn't get any powers, but.
Not yet.
It dumped enough times. There's a part of the sketch where he makes up his story about how he got his superpowers, and you see the reality of him is, in fact, that this horrible science laboratory experiment went wrong because he was too lazy to do his job. Okay. And I'm going, yeah, that's what I would do when I was 15.
Right.
it's a lot of stuff like that. Just us. I don't know how to explain it. It's almost like I tried to just write a really well-structured story and then go, this is what I find hilarious.
Right.
This is what I'm going to put in the story. And then James, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's, I think it works. And, though I do have a question along those lines. A lot of times, comic books that have a lot of humor in them, obviously aren't taken seriously, but, you know, a lot of times they're looked at as like kids' books. How do you guys feel about that kind of stereotype?
Well, I don't know. Something about the way I write, and I did this, I went to School of Visual Arts.
Mm-hmm.
I did this when I was in SVA, is I kind of like tricking the reader. There's something I really enjoy about that.
Right.
So I kind of like presenting things one way, but then almost sucker punching them with something else. So there's actually Champions of Earth on the surface, I feel, is this very kind of fun, funny book. But when you really read the book, the message behind it is kind of sad and messed up. And the ending of the book, I remember James and I, when we were wrapping it up, we're like, this is depressing. It's like this depressing moment. And then what we do immediately after we've kind of had this downer moment is we're like, here's the monkey! Like, here's something funny.
Okay.
There's almost this element of, I guess the way I would feel about it is, I'm okay with that stereotype because I'd like somebody to read the book and be like, oh boy, this is silly. And then it gets kind of real and messed up. And then they have that moment of my reading and then it comes back to like, oh, don't worry, it's silly. Like, you're just,
yeah, I was going to say, I like that stereotype, too, because it might even attract more than one kind of reader. You know, maybe somebody who's just into the humor will just be like, oh, you know, I'm just going to read this for the last, but then there's somebody else that maybe wants to see the deeper meaning to the story that's going to be like, oh, you know what, I'm into this, I want to find out more, you know what I mean? So, I think that's pretty good. Stereotype away.
I think the only thing that's been tough for me and for us in general is there's a lot of stigma for superhero books.
Yeah, that's the hard
part. I think that's the hardest hill to climb because I have a lot of other projects than superhero books, and I find a lot of people who are into indie comics, they want to read those. They're just going, oh, yeah, that's cool. And then I'll go, hey, well, did you check out Champions of Earth? Like, oh, well, it's a superhero book. You know, so I think there's almost, yeah, I think I've gotten enough superheroes for a long time, and I don't need any more. And the way we wrote Champions of Earth, it's really not your garden variety superhero book. So
just that's superheroes in it.
Yeah, that's been the toughest thing to kind of climb through. But
right.
You know, I feel it's we had a really I liked it review from Comic Bastards. Do you know them?
No. Why don't you educate me?
No, I mean they're just a website called Comic Bastards. They do comic reviews and talk about comics. And their gimmick, I get the impression, is to just be really mean. And
okay.
They reviewed our book, they would just be like, this part is boring, and this part is lame. And like you could tell as you're reading it, the guy who's writing the review really does not like superhero comics.
Right, right.
He's just like, this part was typical superhero stuff, it was boring, blah, 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 blah. And then the way he ends the review, he's like, the book, in spite of being what it is, has a good gimmick, and I want to read the next issue, so I recommend it. And I'm going, well, that's good for me. Like, I want to be able to get people who don't like superhero comics to begrudgingly admit to themselves they liked it. To me, that's crazy.
Right, right. Now, I think a big part of the stigma with superhero books is they've been around for 75 years. You know,
yeah.
Batman 75 years. And they haven't changed much in 75 years. You know, the good guys, for the most part, still the good guy, the bad guys, the bad guy. They've made it more interesting at times, but not always. And, one of the great things you had going on in the 80s and 90s, and you see it now too, is now they try to do the anti-hero books.
Sure.
You know, like your Wolverines and whatnot. So when something like this comes along, it's a breath of fresh air because it's like, well, let's take that stigma around superhero books and turn it on its ear again. Like, let's make it funny. Let's tell a serious superhero story, but throw a lot of comedy in and get something new out of it, something special.
You know what I like, is that I just mentioned there was the part about the anti-heroes, because what's interesting about the book and kind of this element behind it is that the characters that they put in jail for them, the Champions of Earth, well, the Champions of Earth is the Scarab and Jupiter. The characters that they put in jail is Captain Galaxy and the Crimson Phantom. Captain Galaxy is supposed to be this golden age superhero. And in a way, he's almost the main character of the story when the story kind of plays itself out. And part of the story is that he doesn't fit in anymore. He's from this golden age and people don't like him.
Right.
And his costume looks stupid and he doesn't really belong. And that's kind of a big part of the story is that he's trying to be a superhero in a time where people don't want superheroes like him anymore. And the Crimson Phantom is supposed to kind of be the anti-hero character, but even he starts getting fed up. So kind of the joke of Champions of Earth is, you guys aren't the superheroes anymore. They're the superheroes now.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the public wants. They want to be lied to. They want to, you know, see them selling their crap on billboards. They want to see their superheroes in movies and like all this nonsense, right? And that's kind of the part of the book that I like. So I guess for me, this is my attempt to make a superhero story that is kind of saying, well, we had our golden age superhero, we had our anti-heroes, now we have the teeny bopper reality show superhero. Like, that's the next step. You know, so that's kind of the way so in a way, I wouldn't call them superheroes, I would call them teenagers who have powers.
Right.
That are dressing as superheroes.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that, sentiment. And that's actually making me think of something else. Now, I'm going to ask both of you guys individually. I'll start with James. Did you like Man of Steel, the movie?
I actually rewatched it the other day, and I still think it holds up. I don't like it as much as I liked it when I saw it in the theaters, but I still like it.
Okay, and Alex?
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Wow.
I have not seen it.
That actually surprises me from a comic book writer.
You know why? And James knows this about me. Like, after a while, I just couldn't sit through superhero movies anymore. I just gave up on them.
Mm-hmm.
They're really long now. And it's like, I don't want to sit through a movie that's 2.5 hours long for a 40-minute fight scene. Like,
So you didn't see Winter Soldier yet?
No.
Oh, okay. You have to go see that.
I haven't seen Winter Soldier.
Yeah, I want to see that too, actually. I heard that was really good.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny? I've heard so many people tell me Winter Soldier is good that I'm like, I might actually see that. But every, you know, it's like, I think the last superhero movie I saw that I really wanted to see, like, I've seen other superhero movies, but I didn't want to go. I think the last superhero movie I saw that I was, like, pumped to go see was X-Men 3.
Oh, okay.
And I really wanted to see it for the part where he says, I'm the Juggernaut bitch. Like, that was one of the main reasons I went to see the movie. So, I mean, I haven't seen it, but I know James wouldn't shut up about it when it first came out.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I was going to say, and then you saw X-Men 3, and I can understand why you stopped seeing superhero movies.
That was the one, right? I was like, F these movies. I was about to drop an F-bomb. I held back. Screw these movies. I'm done with these movies.
But, like, I mean, we've had, if you go back and listen to early episodes, we had a lot of debates about Man of Steel. And I think one of the biggest problems with Man of Steel is, like, it's a good superhero movie, but it doesn't feel like a Superman movie because it feels like DC and Warner Brothers is trying to reinvent their 75-year-old Boy Scout to be more relevant in today's world. You know,
I was going to say, that actually ties in really well with Champions of Earth. That's why I'm not surprised you mentioned it, because, like, Superman, they're always trying to make over Superman, but you just can't. He just doesn't fit in with the crowd, and that's just how it's always going to be, probably. Or if it feels forced sometimes.
Yes.
A big part of that, too, and this is also in like, Captain Galaxy is our golden age Superman, and he's one of the main characters, if not the main character in the book, I feel like. And I think a big part of that, the reason he doesn't fit in anymore, is because it's a different time. You know, it's a different society. Like, you can't create a character that's acting like he's from Leave It to Beaver. You know, it's literally alien to people. Like, people don't act like that anymore. And, you know, it's just bizarre. Like, I remember when I, you know, if you watch really old movies, it's like a different planet.
Right. No.
It's crazy. So when you look at a character like Superman, he's so hard to write to this because on one hand, you have the people who've been reading Superman forever, and they don't want him to change at all. They're like, no, Superman's got to act this way, and this is the way Superman acts. But then on the other hand, you have a ton of people, Superman is lame.
Right.
We don't want to watch a movie about a really boring guy. We'll watch a movie about Batman, you know, so.
Right, right.
I feel bad for people trying to write Superman stuff.
So, actually, you had mentioned, Freight Entertainment, at the beginning of the podcast. But you didn't say much about, tell us a little bit about Freight Entertainment and some of the other books you guys do.
Sure. Well, Freight Entertainment, I started up in 2012, and it was really just, I feel like this is going to sound pretentious, so I apologize in advance. A lot of movements that happen in anything is a result of the people, the creators, finding they can't find anything that's like what they want. And that's kind of where Fire Entertainment was for me, was that I just found there's a lot of books I wish existed, but they don't.
Right.
So, and I make comics, so I said, well, I'm going to make them. That's really how Fire Entertainment, kind of that child.
Uh-oh.
Hello? Did we lose someone?
I think so, yeah. I think Alex just DC'd.
Hello?
Right in mid-sentence. Hello.
Hello?
Something cut off for a second.
It sure did.
So, books didn't exist you wanted to see, and...
Oh, okay. And I just figured I would try to make them and see how they kind of go in the market.
Mm-hmm.
So, right now we have 4 books on the website, but there's actually really 6. There's 2 more in production on the side. They're all in different stages of production, so I just put publication dates to be TBA, because I just kind of have to see what happens. One of the books we have is called Hard Tales. Hard Tales is a humor book, which is, I call it a film noir, like a detective noir comedy fairy tale book. And I know that sounds like it makes no sense, and it kind of doesn't. I mean, James, you read Hard Tales. Why don't you talk about it? Because I feel like we get like an outside perspective.
It's definitely one of the weirdest things I've ever read, but it's still pretty funny. I mean, if that's probably the best opinion I could get, but it's definitely a strange genre. I don't know where it fits.
what it is, I really like the noir detective cliche.
Right.
And I said, you know what would be really funny is if that you have this kind of noir detective with all the same personality traits, gruff, you know, short, doesn't say much, like, this is what I'm going to do, but make him extremely, like, stupid and incompetent. And then, at the same time, have people come to him with cases, but instead of people coming to him, it's fairy tales.
Okay.
But it's not, it's like the way it's presented, the fairy tales, it's not as if they actually exist in story form. Like, it's normal. So, in the first, in the one issue that came out, it's a one shot so far, you know, the detective's name is Rock Hammer. So, he's in his office, and this pig, that's his name. It's actually, his nickname is Rock Hard Hammer.
Okay.
His name is Rock Hammer, but his nickname is Rock Hard Hammer. What happens is, like, the three little pigs, the wife of one of the pigs, she comes to him, and she's dressed like typical film noir, like, detective. She's sexy, right? And she comes to him basically saying, oh, my husband went missing. I think he's gone, blah, 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 blah. And then Rock Hammer is like, well, tell me what you know. And she tells him, and he's like, nah, I can't help you. You know, there's nothing I can do for you. And then she's like, oh, please, I need Rock Hard Hammer, like everybody talks about. He's like, that's not my actual name, yada, yada, yada. And then she basically begs him, and he just keeps telling her no. And then she's like, please. And he's like, all right, fine, whatever. And kind of the whole joke of him is that if he says one thing in the next page, he might say something entirely different. He constantly flip-flops on whatever position he takes. So, and then he gets a partner, and the partner of the, his partner is trying to become a detective. So it's almost like the reader relates through the partner because the partner is actually doing real detective work,
mm-hmm.
while he just keeps jumping to speculations and doesn't follow clues or follow a train of thought that makes sense. And the story just kind of plays itself out. And kind of the gag is that, I don't want to spoil it, but it's probably the most vain thing I've ever written. In the sense that it's just me going, I find it really, really, really funny to have a detective who's completely incompetent and borderline crazy,
mm-hmm.
and everybody has to take him seriously. Yeah. It's just something hilarious to me about that. And then I just like throw fairy tales into it because I like fairy tales. And I just think it's a fun way to screw around with fairy tales and no one's ever done.
Right. No, it is.
So that's Hard Tales. Then I have a project called Headless, which is actually a reimagining of the Headless Horseman. Okay. And it's actually connected to the Salem Witch Trials. And I did the first issue, and I kind of just put the project on the shelf to see where it goes. But now, then that Headless Horseman show came out, and now the Salem show is coming out based on the Witch Trial, which is also connected in my book. And I'm going, I really got to launch this book. So I'm probably gonna kickstart it soon. And I just want to say in advance, I already know people are going to go, oh, you just got that idea from that show. You just did this. It's like, I came up with this a while ago.
Right, right.
So I feel like I almost have to put it out just so when it actually does come out, people aren't like, oh, well, you ripped that off of the show. Because right. I'm sure sooner or later, there's going to be an episode in the show that's going to use an idea that I came up with. And then I have a project called Captives, which is basically kind of a reimagining of the myth of the Minotaur. But it's me. It's basically me. Have you ever seen Battle Royale or read the book?
It sounds familiar. I probably did read it. I just can't.
Hunger Games is kind of ripped off of Battle Royale.
Okay, yes, yes.
It's like basically a bunch of Japanese mm-hmm. students get put on this island and they have to kill each other.
Right, okay.
I've always loved, have you ever heard of Gantz? Which is also kind of like that. I really like stories where you have a group of characters and they're put in a situation where they're basically kind of put in a game where they have to kill each other or mm-hmm. they're probably going to kill each other.
Right.
And I took that, and I also really like the idea behind The Walking Dead, but my biggest beef with The Walking Dead is I feel like it's going nowhere. So, I read The Walking Dead for about 15 issues.
Right.
And I'm actually really glad I did, because I sold those comics for a pretty penny on eBay. And as I'm reading it, I'm going, how is this gonna end? I mean, where is this book going? It just seems like it has no objective.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, they have to survive. And I'm going, even that's going to end eventually because they're going to get old and die. So it seems like the book has no, what's the word I'm looking for? Like goal.
Right.
So I said, I really like these types of ideas, but I want to have a goal. So Captives is basically a story about there's this castle where there's a princess locked up inside this tower. And basically she's been there for hundreds of years and her father created a labyrinth underneath this castle. And he said, anybody who can kill this monster inside the labyrinth, who actually was a suitor of the princesses he didn't approve of, can have his daughter's hand in marriage. So every year, these warriors come to this maze to try to kill this monster and win the princess. But no one's ever done it. Hmm. And if you die inside the labyrinth, you come back as a monster yourself. And the labyrinth is filled with tons and tons of monsters. So it's kind of implied that thousands upon thousands of people have died trying to do this.
Okay.
And James, you read it, you know, would you say that's a pretty good way to sum it up?
Yeah, seems pretty accurate to me.
You know, and it's me also writing a story with absolutely no humor in it whatsoever, because I find I tend to gravitate towards humor a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I really tried to push myself to not write a single joke in the comic. And, you know, it's a project that I really like, and, you know, it has a very clear goal, and the ending is already planned out. So that would be the projects I have currently on the site. And I would get into projects I'm working on, but I feel like they're not far enough along to talk about them. But I have two other projects on the side as well.
Oh, cool. So you definitely sound like you're keeping busy.
Yeah, right.
With comics. How about you, James? You got any other projects, or you just...
No, I just really keep busy with Alex with Champions of Earth. That's my little baby. I mean, I have a couple of scripts that I need to start getting into production, but nothing grounded enough to actually be worth talking about.
I know. James and I actually have another comic that I really want to work on, but I don't want to get too much into it, but it's another horror comic. You know what I'm talking about, right, James?
I'm pretty sure that we wanted to change that into a Champions of Earth arc.
No.
Okay, now I know what you're talking about, yeah.
James and I came up with a comic called Drive Through of the Dead.
Okay.
And it's just like a parody on zombies, combining it with fast food. Oh. I don't even want to get into it, it's so stupid.
The name Drive Through, I just think that's the best name for comic ever. Comedy horror, zombie comic, Drive Through.
Yeah. I would say the only other thing that we're talking about that is probably going to happen is, not probably, we want to do it. We're going to kickstart it. We're actually planning on making a Champions of Earth video game.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, because we've been playing video games forever, and we have a lot of friends, not a lot of
programming
and games, and we're really into old school gaming. So one of our favorite games is Double Dragon 2.
Oh, yeah.
And we also really love River City Ransom. So we wanted to make a game that's kind of like River City Ransom and Double Dragon 2, but based on the Champions of Earth. So
yeah, we love beat 'em ups. It's like an
right.
genre.
We just love the idea of beating somebody up, so just like in real life. So it's just we're from Brooklyn. I don't know. So that's the other thing we have going on together. And so basically what we're gonna do is after this Indiegogo campaign, we're gonna already start getting into talks about producing the game. And then we're gonna kickstart that. So
right. And I was just about to say, you really haven't mentioned the Indiegogo campaign yet.
Yeah,
so.
I should, right?
Yes. since you want to promote that, we should talk about that just a little bit.
You know what's funny? I find that when I get to be on a show with somebody or anything, it's like, I just want to talk to them.
Right.
Like, oh, I guess I'm supposed to talk about that thing that it's like I'm on the show. Basically, we have an Indiegogo campaign going on right now, and it's got 26 days left, so it's definitely, you know, pretty new. And we're just trying to raise $2,300. We have 340 right now, I think.
Yeah.
It's around.
Yeah, it's 340. I'm looking at it.
Yeah. All right. It's 340. We have 340. So we just need to raise 2,300, and that is just going to help for wrapping up Champions of Earth. And that way we'll be able to put it out in October.
Yeah.
What we're doing with the Indiegogo campaign, which I'm really happy about, is I feel like anybody who supports books when they're coming up, I really like to reward them, because to me, there's nothing more important than to a comic book than the people who support it from the beginning. You know, and I feel like it's almost as if they're like a family and they kind of support this project. So what I'm doing is anybody who backs the Indiegogo campaign, they're going to have their name printed in the back of the miniseries of Champions of Earth with a thank you from the Champions of Earth.
Cool.
And in addition to that, we're going to limit the printing dramatically for all the physical copies of Champions of Earth for the Indiegogo campaign. All the covers are going to be exclusive to the Indiegogo campaign, and there's a maximum printing of 225. Even if that's the maximum. So basically, we're only going to produce as many copies of the Champions of Earth miniseries with these covers as backers who order them, plus like maybe two more for me and James. That's it.
Yeah.
So there might only be 20 copies of this. And then after we produce after the Indiegogo campaign is over, we're actually going to start, you know, making them and putting them in shops and selling them at shows. But we're not going to offer those covers ever again.
Cool.
Because my logic is, hey, if you were willing to back us in the beginning, you should have a book that's only maybe 100 copies of, or 200, or 20, whatever the number is.
Yeah.
In addition to that, we're also offering a sketch from me of either the Scarab or Jupiter Man. I'm only limiting it to 15 because, again, it's one of these things that if you were willing to do this for me, then you know, like back me at this point in my career, then yeah, I'm going to give you a sketch that's extremely limited. And I'm not going to make, they're all going to be numbered and signed by me. They're going to say Indiegogo campaign on them, just so people know this is one of the sketches from that campaign. And there's only maybe 10 or 15 or even 2 or 3, whatever the amount is, in existence, but a maximum of 15.
And actually, I think it's only a maximum of 10.
Oh, is it? Whatever it is.
I'm looking at it.
Whatever it is, it's. I tried to keep it really low. And then we have these dolls that we got made for us. If you go to the Indiegogo campaign website, there's actually a Jupiter Man doll on there. And we've limited that to 15, I think. But we're going to keep one for ourselves.
Okay.
For the, like, when we go to shows and stuff. Because James and I were joking about this, that we really hope, I mean, it's almost like a good problem to have, but if we suddenly sold 200, like all of the copies of everything that's limited, it's like, well, crap, we won't have anything for ourselves. Like, do we have to donate to our own campaign? And I'm willing to do it, but I don't know. It's like one of these good problems to have, but we're going to have one for ourselves. And the one we have, and we're only offering it to one person, is we call it the champion package. Basically, it's every single reward. Plus, your full name will be in the comic book. So, and what we mean by that is, your full name will either be in a piece of dialogue. Like, there's one scene in the comic where somebody gets yelled at, and somebody's gonna get fired. And I was going, you know what would be funny if we put that person's full name right there? So right. There's a part where, like, this person was supposed to be doing something, a cameraman screwed up. And I was going, it'd be funny if the producer was going, tell that idiot, you know, let's just say the person's name is Joe Blow. You tell that idiot Joe Blow, he's fired. Or what we were going to do is the Champions of Earth commit a lot of petty crimes in the beginning. So we were going, it'd be funny if we put the person's full name in front of this convenience store they rob. So Joe Blow's candy store or Joe Blow's candy store. But whatever we're going to do, we're going to make it out in the open. And it's not going to be subtle. It's going to be right there for everybody to check out.
Cool. That way it's obvious for them.
We're only offering one, though, because, again, like, I'd love to have that problem of a bunch of people picking the most expensive package. But I'm not writing 10 people's names.
Fitting 10 people's, we can't do that. It's a lot.
I know James would go, screw you, man. Let's get the money.
I'll put everybody's name.
James is like, whatever, man. I'll put 50 names. If I get all that money. it's too weird. So I only put one person's name. You know what? Now that I think about it, actually, whoever picks that package too, your name is also going to be in the video game.
Yeah.
I'll do that as well.
Yeah, why not?
All right. You heard it here first, folks. Get your name in a video game.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's... James, did you say that's everything? I mean, do you have anything to add?
No, we've been pretty detailed, I'd say.
Cool. Well, you guys are now up to 355. I believe in supporting, you know...
Oh, well, thanks.
Independent comics.
Dude, thank you. Cool, man.
So,
cool.
There you go.
Sweet.
Hey.
Oh,
it is, yeah. Thank you, man.
So I always say, you know, I mean, we've had, like, the guys from Face Value Comics and Comics for Kids and Brett Culp with his documentary Legends of the Night on this show. And, you know, it's all about doing what little you can to help people out. So there you go, guys.
So thanks for that. And you know what it is, too, kind of like you were saying, every little bit helps.
Yes.
Even to the point where... what's cool about Indiegogo is the more people who check out your page, your go-go factor goes up. And what happens with that, that sounds stupid, but that's what they call it. What happens, your go-go, it's funny when I have to tell people, yo man, I need my go-go factor to go up.
Do you need boots? What's that? Oh, wait.
What's going on? So what happens when your go-go factor goes up is more people see it on the front page. It's your comic start, your project is trending. So I've even said to people, if you want to help the project out, and even if you're not into it, share it. Because even if you send it to people and they click it, that still helps. Because more people are checking out the project, so it starts trending more.
Yes.
So, yep. But you've definitely, thank you so much. And now you're going to be personally thanked in the back of the book, outside of me thanking you.
Yes. And, yeah, by the time this goes up, that tweet will be all the way down, but I just tweeted out the information. But the link... for their Indiegogo and the website will all be in the description of the show. So make sure you check these guys out.
We also, hopefully it'll be up by the time the show is posted up, but I'm adding this aspect to the video while I'm actually going to talk a little bit about the project, because a big complaint I've been getting from a lot of people about my Indiegogo campaign is that I don't have a video of me talking about it.
Okay.
And everyone's going, you need to have the video of you talking about it. And I'm going, yeah, but why can't I just show the trailer to the comic? And this is extremely important. So there's going to be a video of me talking about it. Hopefully it'll be up. So if anybody is checking out this podcast and they're going, hey, well, we want to actually see the guy talk about it. Well, it'll come up eventually.
Yes. So I need to ask you guys.
Yes.
First, second, or third edition rules.
Oh.
I like them all.
Like,
you didn't even the edition I play isn't even on that list.
Well, actually, I stopped playing the second edition, so that's why I was curious.
I'm a fourth edition man myself.
Just so people know, we're talking about Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh yeah.
I really like second edition a lot, but there's certain things I like a lot about. Like, I think the most valid argument James has made for third edition, because back in the day I used to hate it, is when they added feats to the game, it actually makes all the fighters unique.
Mm-hmm.
So like, if you play second or first edition of Dungeons and Dragons, when you're using two fighters in the party, they're exactly the same. There's no
outside of weapon choice, I guess.
Right.
No difference between them. So you as a player get annoyed because your character is exactly the same as the other person's character. Like, you don't feel different. But mm-hmm. in third edition, they give you feats. So your fighter would be totally different than somebody else's fighter, which is pretty cool.
Right.
So I play a version of Dungeons & Dragons right now where we use third edition rules, but my Dungeon Master incorporated a bunch of house rules from second and first edition.
Okay.
Also, I really kick it over a dwarven mage. I know last do it in third edition. Can you do it in fourth edition, James?
Yeah, you can do anything.
I hate that. That really bothers me. You should be able to cast magic in your dwarf. I'm sorry. No.
I actually forgot that was even a thing. It's been
I can't
so
stand that. It drives me crazy.
Your way of thinking is old.
Yeah.
Mages now, and that's it.
Even like elven paladins. I'm like, no, only humans can be paladins. Like, it's the rules of the rules.
Yes. It's funny that you mentioned paladins. I was always drawn to being paladins because I felt they were more unique than the regular
more
fighters.
More unique than a fighter, yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah, and not only that, what's kind of funny about the old edition rules is that humans, they could be any class,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have a level cap. But most people, I argue, don't make it to level 20 when they play Dungeons & Dragons. So then when you use a human in Dungeons & Dragons, you're going, well, I want to be special. So everybody picks the paladin, because only humans can be paladins.
Mm-hmm.
And then third edition comes along, it's like, everybody can be a paladin, and now it ruins.
You still had to be lawful good, though.
Yes.
Ooh.
Uh-oh. I think we lost Alex again.
Did we lose Alex again?
And then it died out again.
Yeah, it said you were put on hold, and then you came back. So, okay.
Yeah, I was saying, I've been talking too much, so James, you should talk more.
You know, man, I'm the quiet one. I'm like,
No, you're not. He's being polite. He's not. I'll tell you a piece of inside information. James is really afraid he's going to say something stupid.
Thank you. Thank you for putting that out there. I'm like, I might say something dumb.
He's terrified he's going to say something dumb.
Oh, that's okay. I say something dumb every week, so it's fine.
Man, that's great.
So since you guys met playing Dungeons & Dragons, and you both seem to still love the game so much, have you thought about doing a Dungeons & Dragons book?
With the actual Dungeons & Dragons license?
Well, let's say you got the license to do it.
That would be great, dude. We have so many stories we could do. You kidding me? I'd go ham on that.
I would love to. I mean, I actually, Captives is a fantasy comic. I remember when James was reading Captives, he was going, this reminds me of Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
True. But
second edition, in particular.
Yeah, it's especially second edition Dungeons & Dragons.
Just the artwork.
This guy does this role in the party. This guy's this role in the party. Everyone has very defined roles. But I would love to. Yeah, of course. But our D&D campaigns are ridiculous. They're ridiculous.
Yeah, it would be crazy. It'd be like the weirdest Dungeons and Dragons story ever, but it would still have the name there, you know?
I remember James, one of the first things he did when we were playing D&D was, I was the Dungeon Master, and the group was trying to haggle with a guy for the price of a sword or something. And James' character had a really, really low intelligence. Because James, I do the same thing.
It was like a six.
It was like a 6, yeah, like, which means he has like a 60 IQ in real life.
But I had an 18 00 strength.
But he was really strong! He had a big sword. and James always plays that character. And it was like the first time he made that character. And he would roleplay him really dumb. He would just stay in character. And there was a point where the group was trying to haggle for the price of the sword. And one of the players says to the, blacksmith,
I only have this much gold.
I only have X amount of gold. But he was lying. Like, he said he only had 100 gold coins, but the party, in fact, had more than that. And then James says, he's lying! And everybody got mad at him! And I was like, I like this kid. Like, that was the moment I went, that's great! He just stayed in character, the whole time.
Yes.
Even to the hindrance of the group, he stayed in character.
I killed how many of the, by acting, he would charm me, because my intelligence was really low, that affected my charm resistance, right? Was that how that worked?
Yeah.
He would charm me all the time, and I'd always end up killing this kid's characters. And it was always the same kid, over and over again. It was hilarious. And I didn't even mind, I laughed at it after a while. Like, making a better character.
He knew it was coming. Like James would get charmed.
And then he started rolling a new character.
He just knew he was dead.
It's like, don't roll a mage if you can't take a hit from a two-handed sword.
It was always this moment of James would just go, he would get charmed, and then he would turn toward that player, like, knowing, like, now you die. Like, now I swing my sword at you.
You see, now I'm thinking about the Dungeons & Dragons comics from, when I was younger and I read them, and they weren't fun, They felt like a lot of them felt like generic,
fantasy
stories, right? Like, what made this Dungeons and Dragons? But see, you guys throwing the comedy in, I think I would read those.
Well, now that, we should think about that.
It's something I'd love to look into.
I can't even think. Some of the stuff we've done in game is so, we had this dungeon master. He was a great dungeon master, and I was actually in the group. And he had this part where we were encountering these orcs, and he was saying they're speaking orc, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then he would start to roleplay the speaking orc, and he would just be like, no, 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 whatever sound he would make to indicate that's the language they're speaking. And then I said it in character, what are they talking? No, I said it as a player, what are they talking about? He's like, you don't know, you don't understand orc. And then I was joking that they were apparently really riled up, like they were really angry for some reason. And I was joking that they were arguing amongst themselves about how this other group of warriors nearby has cake and they don't, and they're jealous. Don't cake. And then one of the dungeon masters started to play along, and he was role playing one of the other characters, being like, "Hey man, why don't we just eat some cupcakes?" And this other guy's like, "No, no, I want a full size cake. I say we go kill those guys and take their cake." And then I killed them. Like I just came in and killed the group. And then from that point on, I always joked that he always had cake. And that was like the characters, and his name was, Eater of Cake. That was his title.
His title.
The Eater of Cake. And it was because, that's the type of characters that would be in the game. Like, even now I'm role-playing a character, and I made him the Eater of Cake. Like, I still find that funny. And my poor Dungeon Master's just not ready for it. He's trying to, run a serious game, and I keep screwing it up for him.
It all makes sense to me. I don't know. I don't see what his problem is.
No, he doesn't get mad. It's just he'll be like, you enter a room. The Arc Magi is there. He looks at you. How are you doing? And I'll be like, I enjoy cake, good sir. How are you? And then he'll get thrown off. He'll get thrown off, what he's trying, the tone he's trying to set.
So
we do that a lot.
So after the Indiegogo campaign's done, what are the next steps? I guess just printing the book and sending it out.
Well, if we don't reach our goal, we have flexible funding, because my logic is the book's going to get done no matter what.
Right.
It just depends on how long.
it just what happens is, now if we don't reach our goal, how much of it comes out of our own pockets. That's really the next step. So for me, I was saying to James, I was going, if we don't reach our goal, it could take us, maybe up to a year to get it done and pay for printing and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if we do hit our goal, then we'll just kind of wrap it up. In a month, the book needs to be certain pages inked. Like issue 2, half of it is not inked.
Okay.
Then it needs to be professionally lettered. We have an advanced copy on the website where you can read the first issue, but it's lettered. James lettered it. It was just done.
It's awful.
It was just done so we could have something to show people.
Right.
Yeah. Like,
So we need to re-letter it, and then we need to get the second issue inked, and then we're going to get the book toned. And if we reach our stretch goal of 4,900, we're going to get the book colored.
Okay.
And after that, what we're going to do is we're going to print it, and then we're going to send out our Indiegogo exclusives. And then we're going to have new covers and sell those. We're actually probably going to debut at New York Comic Con because I'm trying to get a table there.
Okay.
And we're also going to have books available in local shops. So we're going to, I have a comic book shop here in Vancouver. So anybody who's listening in Vancouver, Canada, the comic book shop, that's what it's called. They already told me they would carry my books.
Okay.
And there's a ton of stores in New York City that I'm sure James can get the books in as well.
Yeah, I'll be doing the footwork.
And if you got any cool stores and you're in Philly, right?
Yes.
Yeah, if you have any cool stores in Philly, you know, maybe I'll give them a call and see if I can get some books in their stores.
All right. Well, I'll give you some contact information.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. And, that's the next step. But I would say if we meet our goal, everything will be pretty much wrapped up. And I would say around, oh, and obviously we're going to put it on Comixology.
Mm-hmm.
I would say around Halloween time, it would be in Comixology and be available in local stores. And if we don't meet our goal, add like 6 months to a year to that.
Cool.
That's really it. Then it becomes, James, how much money do you have extra?
Not much.
Not much. And then I'm going through my own finances. Okay, how much do I have right now?
Not much.
So New York Comic Con this year in October.
Yeah. We already, I sent in an application for a table. I don't know if people know this, but you have to like apply for a table.
Yes.
You can't just buy one. I think
you just walked in with your own table.
I was ignorantly like, I got the money. What's the problem? Like, I can pay for it. James and I are going to get half a table, which is even funnier. So we're going to like switch off between each other. Cause they tell you, if you get half a table, you only get one chair. Like they're really specific about that. And I'm going, okay, well then me and James will switch the chair rotation. Whoever gets the chair at this time.
Well, that's, it's funny cause, I know that part of it's a union thing as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Union law states only two chairs per table.
Yeah, so, no, but that's cool because, I will be there, so I'll definitely.
Oh, awesome. We should hang out.
Yeah.
We're New York guys. We can show you where to go.
We know all the best spots. We know all the worst ones.
Yes, I have a friend who's an artist. I'll be, what's working at his table, and he'll keep me busy all weekend.
What's his name?
I don't know if I should say his name on air.
Oh, I was like, maybe I know him. You can tell me afterwards.
No, I'll say it. I have been bugging him for 6 months now to come on the show. It's Greg Horn.
That name is really familiar, but I don't. I'm gonna look it up right now. I'm like, I know who this is.
Emma Frost. He did the covers for Emma Frost.
Okay, I know who this is.
Yes.
You're going to be working at his table, just like hanging out?
I work for him, technically, when we're at the cons.
Oh, that's great. He worked for me.
Yes. No, but he
becomes not his friend anymore.
I will say this for him, you know, it's always a party at his table. We always have a good time, so.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, well, I'll definitely know where to go now. I'll just Where is Greg Horn? Are you Greg Horn? Yes, I am. All right, you get out of the way. Where is David? I have no time to talk to you, good sir. Where is David?
He's used to that.
What I've actually done a lot is when I go to comic conventions, I think a lot of people don't know what creators look like. I think that's pretty normal.
Yes.
So you'll go to a convention and there'll just be a guy sitting in a chair and they'll say the name of like whoever you're coming to see. And I'll just be like, oh, are you so-and-so? And then I'll say to the person, hey, so-and-so, I love your work on this. And then 9 times out of 10, somebody's saying to me,
I'm not so-and-so.
I'm not so-and-so. I'm your friend.
He's out to lunch.
He's out to lunch.
Oh, he's out to lunch.
Just recently I was at Emerald Comic Book Convention, which is an awesome convention, by the way. And I went to see this one. I'm not going to say who he was because my reaction to him was kind of negative, so I don't want to say who it was.
Mm-hmm.
But this one guy who had like an internet comic that I read for a while, I went to his table and I saw him. And I said, hey, are you so-and-so? And he looks at me with this face kind of like, are you an asshole? Like, of course I'm so-and-so. And what he does is he looks at me and then he looks up at his name on the wall and he goes, yes. And I go, oh, hey, I really like your work on X, Y, and Z. And he goes, thank you. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna walk away now.
I know, and I'm not welcome.
Yeah,
I'm sorry I didn't know if you were that guy. I'm sorry, I should have known in advance.
Yeah, no, I've been going to conventions since 2000 and volunteering since, like, 2008. And I've seen that over and over again where, you know, with the artists and the writers, like, people don't know what they look like. And there's the ones that find it funny, you know, and they make a joke of it. And there are those that get upset. And it's like, why are you getting upset? You know?
Don't have a poster of me on your wall.
In fact, when I met J.G. Jones, I went over to his table, and he wasn't there.
Okay.
And he was actually, like, the next row over talking to someone. And
okay.
So, but I didn't know that, right? So he's behind me and sees me, and I talked to the person next to his table and said, did he leave? Is he still here? And he goes, he looks up and he goes, oh, man, those big artists, they're all jerks.
That's so funny.
They don't stick around. And I turn around and I'm like, you're J.G. Jones, aren't you? And he just smiled at me. So
funny you picked up on that, because I would have been like, you're damn right, I hate that J.G. Jones. Like, I would have said something stupid. Like, I would have totally said something stupid.
Well, he had a southern accent, and I knew he was from Louisiana, so kind of put two and two together.
I wouldn't have done that much research. I would have screwed that one up. I pissed off, what's the name of the artist, the big artist for Invincible? Ryan Otley?
I don't have
no idea.
One of the guys who worked on Invincible.
Okay.
It wasn't the first guy. I think it was the second guy. I forgot his name. I was talking to Hank Kirkman. This is before Kirkman was big.
Okay.
And I was like, hey, guys, what's up? So why is Invincible late? I'm like, I didn't need to be pissed about it. I was just, like, asking the question. I'm like, hey, I know this book, like, is not coming out on time anymore. Why? And he got super defensive and pissed off. he was like, well, I've been busy. What do you want me to do? I'm like, I don't know. I want you to produce it on time. What am I supposed to... And I was really young, so I was just... I didn't realize that was rude. And then I also had this really bad habit of, like, I would talk to comic book creators, and they would have a book coming out. I'd be like, yeah, that book's really awesome. How's the sales? Because I was always curious if a book was selling well.
Right, right.
Because I want to make sure it's healthy. But mm-hmm. A lot of indie books, like, you know, mine included, are not making these awesome sales in the beginning. So everybody gets defensive about that question, too. They're like, it's selling fine. I'm like, oh, well, you know, I was wondering. They're like, well, don't wonder about it. Don't even ask. Okay, and then, of course, a few months later, the book gets canceled because the sales weren't there.
All right, so now I know. When I see you at New York Comic Con, I'm going to ask, how are the sales and where are the books at? Like, why are they late?
Why? You just called me Alex? How are the sales? And I'd be like, bad.
Yeah, we'd be honest, at least. They're not good.
Bad. Know. I don't even know. Like, I would love if the number. That's almost a weird question too, because I feel like for me, I'm a pretty simple guy. Like, if I sold 50, I'd be happy. Like, that's how low my expectations are. But I've seen guys. I've asked guys that question, and then I actually do the research on my own in the future, and then find out that they were selling like 10,000 copies. And I'm like, what are you complaining about? That's awesome.
Right.
Like Kirkman was saying that Invincible had a rough start when it came out. It was selling 15,000 copies.
Right, right. But
that's a rough start. Give me a break.
Yes, but didn't Invincible come out like right towards the end of the golden age of comics? You know, but the 90s, you know, so where books were having million issue runs for, you know, the speculator market, like X-Men was selling like crazy and people were buying you know, if not a million, at least 500,000 copies of these books. So when something sold 15,000, like, but 15,000 now, it's like, wow, that's a really good book, you know?
Yeah, I would love to have that problem.
Yes.
That would be great. Oh, man, my book only sold 15,000 copies. Excuse me. That's, you know, I made in a month what I usually make in a year back in my normal life. That's the funny flip side of making comics too. I think most people don't know is that most creators, especially because I'm drawing one of my own books, they can't work real jobs.
Yeah.
So then you always have these like ridiculously stupid odd jobs you do just to make money.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, you know, if I heard somebody say, "Hey man, you made $30,000 in comics this year," I'd be like, "I'm a millionaire, baby!" Like, that's just like even like it sounds. You know, James laughs. He doesn't think it's a big deal. I do.
Right now,
GoGo is at $355, like you just told us, right? Thank you again for the donation. To me, that's crazy. I'm like, someone's gonna give me money to make comics.
Yes.
And and even if it's to the point where it's like, yeah, but look at the chart, you're still losing money. I'm like, no, but I didn't lose money anyway. Now I'm getting some back. Like, that's insane.
Unbelievable.
It is very much like just this, I don't know, if anybody wants to give me anything for making comics, I'm very happy about it. So.
Well, I would say don't change your attitude, because you seem to have the right attitude right now.
I've seen guys, you know, like, again, it's just this attitude of like, I'm only making $50,000 a year in comics. Oh, boo-hoo. Life stuff. You know, I mean, James, how many jobs? I think combined, James and I have had, what, 40 jobs?
Like, I was going to say 30, but maybe 40.
Yeah, 40. Like, we jump from the stupidest job in the world to the next stupidest job in the world.
Because the hours are good. Nice really and flexible.
You need really flexible, especially me. I need really flexible hours because I need to draw.
Right.
You know, and if I'm making enough, like if I remember once I was at work and I think I just started making enough money to have like a surplus at the end of the month. And I was just telling somebody at work, I was like, dude, I got like an extra $100 in the bank. Like, that was such a big deal.
Oh.
And what did I do with it? I spent it on Christmas presents for other people. I'm like, I can buy other people's stuff. Like, it was a huge deal to me. And then, you know, if I ever start making a surplus, I'm like, well, I better just give it to artists to draw my books. Like, that's where my money usually goes.
All right, guys. So we're at about an hour. So. Real quick, I guess, start with you, James. Where can people find you online?
Well, I'm on, Twitter at, I gotta actually print now. It's probably easier to spell it out. It's print at DarkSydexPlays, DarkSydexPlays, with a little at sign. That's on Twitter. I have like a little YouTube channel. I make some video game stuff every now and again. That's really what that's for. And then, and my Facebook, I don't know. My Facebook is really just for talking to my buddies. I don't really branch out on that. It's like AIM for the next generation. AOL is the messenger. I can't even probably say AIM without churning some heads. What's that? So Facebook's really just my AIM.
AIM, you say?
Yeah. Aren't they kind of like Hydra?
America Online? What's that?
Oh, God. Yeah, exactly. But, well, the less you know, better.
Okay.
James is basically saying, do not friend request him.
That's what he said. No, it's not that. It's just like, I hate like when I see people with like 2,000 friends. I'm like, I bet they only know like 30 people. Like, I'd rather just have like 50 friends that I know on some level. Yeah, so that's my Facebook rant. But Twitter's cool. Twitter's, you know, no hold bars. Just go crazy.
Anybody can invite him on Twitter. He's fine with it.
Yeah.
And Alex?
You could follow me. I'm on Facebook. And I think if you just type in Alex Banchita on Facebook, Banchitta, it'll come up. It's just like a little F, which is the Fright logo.
Okay.
I pretty much only use Facebook to, like, put up stuff from my comic book studio.
Mm-hmm.
I will like people's comments, like friends, but I don't even do that too much. So I mostly just use it for business reasons. Then I have a Twitter. I think my Twitter handle is at Fright Entertainment. At Fright, I think it's at Fright Comics. I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Oh, it's on the way to find out.
I got it. But I won't. And then Jamie.
No, don't worry. I'm here for you. I'm like the PR guy one day.
James, buddy.
Yes, it's at Fright Comics.
Okay.
That's my Twitter. And then, on Tumblr, I'm frightentertainment.tumblr.com. And what's awesome about that is I put up a ton of artwork on there from all my comics. And then I also am on, I'm on something else. I don't know what. I forget. But, I have a website.
FrightEntertainment.com?
FrightEntertainment.com. And then I also, my email is alex@FrightEntertainment.com, which you know, because we've been corresponding through that.
Yes.
So yeah, if anybody wants to email me, I'm totally cool with it. Just, I've had a few people kind of asked me to check out their work because I hire artists and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I would say about that is I'm totally fine with checking out people's stuff, but if they want a critique, they're gonna have to wait on it because I don't really have a lot of time in the day to check out people's stuff
right.
And like critique it. And also the other thing too is I don't read people's scripts,
So, like, if somebody wants to send me a script, I'm not going to read it. Just throwing that out there.
I'd read a script. You could send a script to James at FrightEntertainment.com. That'd be so cool. I'd love to critique a script.
And don't get me wrong, I totally understand, because I write, like, 4 books. Six. It's a lot. I write a lot of books, and I understand how incredibly hard it is to get people to read your stuff. You know, I jokingly said, I would love to go up to an editor and be like, here's $100. Can you read my comic? Because I understand. It's like, I don't want to read your comic. You know, it's like, I'll pay you to read my comic. So, it's really time consuming. So I don't do it, but James will do it.
All right. So you hear that, people, everyone send your scripts to James. Fill up his inbox tonight. He'll love it.
Make up stories and send them to James. Go, this is my script.
Yeah, good, I like it. Nice 3-arc structure going on.
I like zombies and I like drive-thrus. How'd you figure this out? How'd you know I was into that?
Alright.
Thank you for having us on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you a lot.
Thank you guys for doing it. This has been a lot of fun.
I'll say this, thank you for the pledge. You said you did 15, right? Well, I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna upgrade you to 25, my friend. I'm gonna give you the actual Indiegogo books. 15 is like the PDF and like a bunch of little bundle stuff. I'm gonna actually give you books, so.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
No, thank you!
Alright. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, don't let your cape be caught in the door. Have a good week. Speaking of capes, you can tug on ours by joining the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+ at Superhero Speak. If you have any comments on my bad jokes, you can email me at dave@superheroespeak.com.
You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, and various other channels. Or if you'd like to tease the beard of knowledge, you can email me at ben@superheroespeak.com.
We also occasionally rant about things on our website, superheroespeak.com. Or, if you'd like to further discuss the prowess of Rainbow Dash versus anybody in the greater geek universe, you can email me at john@superheroespeak.com.
And don't forget to check out our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. companion show, Agents of Speak, which you can watch live most Tuesdays around 9 p.m. on our Google+ page, or archived on our YouTube channel. Now let go of our cape.